Hello and welcome to the Fergan. My name is Dan and I'm here to try and make sense of these turbulent times from a heathen perspective. Visit fergan.com for links, information and an archive of past episodes. You're listening to the Fergan podcast with me, Dan. And in this episode, I am joined by my guest, Golden Age Man, also known by the name Tom. So, Golden Age Man, many of you who listen to this might be familiar with his Odyssey and YouTube channel. He also posts on Gab under the name Golden Age Man and has a Telegram channel. His Telegram, Odyssey, and YouTube channels have not been particularly active recently because he's had a busy year, and we're going to get into the reasons for that. To get this kind of out of the way, some of you will know that Tom and I have some differences, namely over religion, and the only reason I'm mentioning that is because I don't want anyone listening to this to expect us to be getting into that debate. That's not going to be the focus of this conversation, and frankly, Tom and I have more in common than we have not in common. And I believe it's best to focus on those things. And yeah, from what I've seen of Tom's work with his channel, Golden Age Man, he's a man of action. He's got a lot of good insights, a lot of good philosophies and thoughts. And I thought it'd be good to get him on to go through those and to discuss them. So this is going to be another episode like the Woodlander one, where we discuss basically solutions, because Tom and I have made quite similar moves in the last 6 months. And we'll start off by talking about what those moves are. But Tom, welcome to the Fergan podcast. It's good to be speaking with you.
Hey, man. Yeah, just want to say, really appreciate you having me on. I have listened to quite a few of your podcasts. I think the production quality is really high and I've really enjoyed it. It's really interesting content. So, you know, much appreciated. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think I particularly admire the fact that you're able to see through the differences, because, you know, you come from a Christian mindset, and obviously the Fergan is largely heathen based, pagan based. But I think it takes a kind of an honest, sincere person to see through those differences. And I'd like to think that, well, I think I'm sure that both of us are the kind of person that can focus on the commonalities and things. So I very much appreciate your kind words and support there.
In my opinion, we have, it's a bit of a sort of the Christian versus pagan thing. I don't want to get too much into that, but it's a bit of a LARP, a lot of it, because it's, it's mostly online. Like, these people aren't actually meeting in real life.
Of course,
Firstly, that's the first thing to get out of the way. And secondly, it's coming out, like, if you're not, we have an actual serious enemy, like actually quite a few of them, and they're working together to destroy us. And if you're getting caught up over some LARPy nonsense online, like falling out over Christian versus pagan or whatever, when you're, without putting too fine a point on it, your entire race is in danger of going extinct. Like, you've lost the plot, in my opinion. These are minor issues compared to the serious problems we're confronted with. And I think there's a tendency people have to want to, because the reality of the situation is so dire and so grim. It seems like that on the face of it anyway. I actually don't think it is all that bad, which is like the whole reason behind calling my quote unquote brand, if you like, Golden Age Man or whatever. I even called my property Golden Age Farm. So I think the Golden Age, like, there's a reason for that. And I think that if you orient yourself correctly for the next couple of years, it really will be a Golden Age, because it's forcing a lot of people to get back into contact with things that really matter. Like, people weren't doing it on their own, but you're going to be forced to. So for the people that position themselves correctly, I actually think it is going to be a golden age, and it is going to be your future can actually look really bright. But if you don't position yourself correctly, it's going to be a really horrible time for you. And I think people have a tendency because they look at it and it makes them feel bad. The truth makes them feel bad about the future. And then because they feel bad about it, they sort of mentally recoil from really grappling with the problem and go back into what their safe space is, which is arguing online about whether pagan or Christian is right. Does that sound accurate to you?
I fully agree. And, you know, I've tried regularly to make the point that whilst I am opposed to Christianity, I'm not opposed to Christians. And, you know, you and Mark Malone are examples of two guys who are Christians, but are men of action who I admire what you're doing. And I would much rather focus on what we've got in common. I mean, there are no doubt plenty of pagans all over the internet, Telegram, wherever, who on paper, yeah, I share the same faith as them, but in practice, they're not doing anything half as admirable as Christians, such as yourself and Mark Malone are doing. So yeah, I agree. And, you know, I actually, funnily enough, I recently changed the background because I only use Telegram on desktop because I don't have a smartphone. And I recently changed the background of my Telegram window app to a meme I saw recently, which was like a cartoon of an old guy on his deathbed saying, "I wish I'd argued more online." And the reason I did that was just to remind myself every single time I switch Telegram on that arguing with people there is a waste of time. And I think that you probably would share that sentiment.
100%, mate. And that's partly the reason that I stopped bothering posting online, because there were a few people that commented that actually commented some really constructive things, and that they were like, "Hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm setting up my homestead. I've bought some land or whatever." And I'm like, "That's really, you know, that's really great." But you also have to deal with the idiots who they're just very low energy type people who want to come in and criticize and throw poo at your ideas, right? And it's just like I ended up bucketing people. It's like you can place people on a slider of how I guess you could call this agency, you know, their level of agency, but how much their thoughts are disconnected from their actions, right? And there's a lot of people that spend a lot of time online who don't know, it appears to me, how to connect their thoughts with their actions. Now, this is either in pagan or Christian circles. This is a problem. I don't know too much about the pagan stuff, but I know a lot of Christians who basically have zero agency. I actually think that Christianity is great, but Christians, on the most part, are pretty useless. But that it's not about that. It's about, can you translate your thoughts into action? Mm. And what, you know, we've had since, I don't know, since you could call it the alt-right awakening or whatever in 2016, we've had a lot of debate and a lot of thought and a lot of, like, everyone who is receptive to it has been exposed to our ideas by this point, right?
Yeah.
And now it's a question of, are you going to do anything with that or not? I don't know if you've seen this meme, but it's like all these guys in a forest, like all these Wojak guys have showed up to the forest, and he's like, "Right, we've broken away from the system. Who's got some real skills?" And they're all like, "I don't have any skills, but I brought my copy of Evola." And there's like, there's so much of that.
Yeah.
And it's just not helpful. Like, reading another Evola book is, for the most people, is not going to help you. Like, there is a time and a place for that. But, like, frankly, right now is a time for action and not a time for more intellectual wankery, to not put too fine a point on it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've actually, my wife and I have amassed quite a good sort of personal library. You know, we've got a good collection of fiction and nonfiction and practical and that. And I've got a huge pile of philosophical books. There are several Evola books that I've not read yet. There's loads of stuff that I'm gagging to read, but I've got a pile of good books on self-sufficiency, on keeping chickens, on growing vegetables, on, you know, these kind of subjects. And I've actually made the conscious decision recently to delay reading all of those philosophical, religious, theological books, which I'm you know, in my heart, I have a yearning to read because I'm fascinated to learn more about that stuff. But, you know, and this is probably going to be the real thrust of our conversation here, that now is the time for action, for practical action. So before you kind of respond to that, I just want to ask you and just set up for the listeners here, what is it that you have done over the last 6 months? And, you know, this is why I've invited you on the podcast to talk about this, because you've made some pretty big moves over the last 6 months, right?
Yeah. So I'd say a bit more than past 6 months, but okay. It has probably stepped up a pitch this year. So like, just to give a quick bit of history here, back in 2020, like when I sort of, when everyone knows what happened, the COVID stuff happened, and there are a few of us that, or quite a lot of us that looked around in sort of bemusement. And I realized during that year, during the mid 20, about May, June 2020 was when the realization hit that a lot of the models that I had about how people worked, how societies worked, and what invariants there were about how society would work in the future, a lot of those models I had were completely wrong. Yeah. And the reality was telling me that. Like, for example, if you'd asked me before, will people willingly submit to wearing, like being forced to wear a mask and not being allowed outside to walk their dog and getting arrested? I would have said, of course not. The people will rise up, they'll revolt, they'll never put up with that. And yet, what did we see? 95% of people meekly obeyed and knuckled under and accepted every humiliation and every form of control. So my conceptual model of reality was fundamentally wrong. And then I observed reality was different from how I thought it would work. And I was forced to revise certain assumptions I'd had. And I did a whole video on this, which is not available anymore. I might make it public again. But I essentially, you know, sat down and thought, hold on, all of these things that I thought were a given are actually not. Like, I'd always thought it was a baseline assumption that you could go into a supermarket with money and buy and spend money and come out with food, right?
Yeah.
And yet every supermarket I went into, they would not let me in unless I put a mask on. And suddenly I realized, like a ton of bricks, it came down on me. Like, hold on a second. If they can force you to wear a mask, they can force you to do anything. And I didn't like that. I don't like the fact that they can force me to do anything. That's called being a slave, is what that is. Indeed, yeah. So, you know, midway through 2020, I realized what I had to do. I'm like, okay. Firstly, people are retards. Like, the average person is literally a retard, like a controlled robot almost by the media, they're like MK Ultra mind controlled.
Yeah. The NPC meme was no longer a joke.
No, it's not. It's actually very, these people are dangerous. Ordinary people are dangerous because with one click of the fingers from the media, they will be turned on you. And that's the other thing that shocked me, was how much the average person was complicit in not only going along with this, but also enforcing it. The lady who sat next to you on the airplane was telling you to put your mask on. You know, the guy, not necessarily the staff of the shop, but the other customers of the shop were threatening to get you thrown out if you didn't put your mask on. So these people are controlled by the state. They're mind controlled. They're under a spell, you could say, and they're dangerous. So firstly, relying on these people is suicide. You can't rely on these people for anything. And secondly, you can't rely on the institutions. They can cut you off. So if the supermarket can cut you off from getting food, the flying anywhere, I used to think, oh, I'll just leave the country if it gets bad. That was my thought process, right? But then you have to get a COVID test to get on a plane. And then you have to show a vax certificate to fly somewhere. And suddenly all that freedom you thought you had to move, that underlying assumption about how base reality worked, it has been rug pulled out from under you. You can't fly. You might not be able to. Government makes one decree saying, now we're shutting down all flights. Okay, now what are you going to do? So that's not a solution. So I basically, you know, during those couple of months came to the realization, I'm like, I need to find land and I need to become self-sufficient in every possible thing I can, because I don't trust these people and I don't even trust that I'm going to have ability to move freely in the future. So that's just a sort of introduction for where my head was at. So fast forward from then, and I've basically been working towards this. Like, that's when I started working towards it. And then beginning of this year, I'd already moved to the United States. My wife is from the US, so I moved here to live here. Beginning of this year, I found a bit of land, bought it. That's in Kentucky. And it's in a pretty rural area, far from the cities. It's got a lot of things that I wanted. And I also got a house built on there because it was just raw land. It had a barn, you know, like an old barn, but that's it. So I needed a house. So I got land and a house. And just recently my house was actually delivered. So I got the Amish to make me a house, and they will deliver it to you on a truck. It's kind of funny. They build it in like in two bits. So it's like a double wide, what's called a double wide, which so the maximum like you can ship on the road is like 14 foot wide or something. Yeah. So they ship it in two trailer loads and then they sort of stick it together on site for you. They do really good work with wood, the Amish. It's a wooden house.
Brilliant.
Like it's really nice. And so that's got finished recently and yeah, that's done. I'm hoping to be moving there within the next few weeks. And then the plan is to start basically spinning up a homestead, much like what you've done. So we'll be getting chickens. I've had chickens before, so I know how to deal with those. I want to get a dairy cow. So I've got a little 6-month-old daughter and she drinks a lot of raw cow's milk. So I want to make sure that we've got that on hand.
Good.
Yeah. And essentially like transitioning my life to be a lot closer to the land. And this is what my instinct is telling me to do. And I see that there's a lot of people that their instinct is telling them to do that because I see that that's what you've done. And that's something that's one of the reasons I have so much respect for you, Dan, is because you've actually acted on your instincts. And, you know, if you believe strongly enough in a future that you want to manifest for yourself, you can find a way. It doesn't matter what your resources are. You will find a way and you've found a way. And I think that anyone can find a way. It's just a case of putting the energy behind it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the kind of recent years of my life have been a real lesson in the ability to manifest, even when I don't consider myself someone who's particularly kind of, flush with self-confidence or anything like that. Yet here I find myself in 2022 hosting a podcast and, you know, I've become a music performer who gets up on stage alone with just a guitar. You know, even just 5 years ago, that would have been unthinkable for me. And this all kind of stems from beginning my musical project Walkinsman in 2013, and everything that's developed from there has kind of taught me and forced me to be more kind of bold in wanting and manifesting things, that has definitely played a role in my ability to make the big changes that I've made recently as well. But yeah, I mean, my kind of thought process over the last 3 years is very similar to yours. You know, by 2020, I was already convinced that there was no political solution. You know, I'd been blackpilled on that long enough. You know, I'd been looking into the, you know, international central banking and all of that kind of stuff to know that voting does fuck all, frankly.
It's a dog and pony show for the masses. It's a joke. Beyond the joke. I think they've even stopped barely bothering to play along with it at this point.
Well, they have in Britain now. I mean, they're rubbing it in people's faces. We now have a prime minister who no one elected, you know, for a party which hasn't been voted for in many, many years. They're rubbing it in our faces now. This is just the way it is. This is the beginning of technocracy. This is, rulership by an unelected technocratic elite, and that's essentially what Rishi Sunak is. He is a representative of the technocracy.
He will be absolutely a good compliant little boy with everything that his higher ups tell him to do. You can see it on his face.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And but when 2020 hit, prior to that, although I didn't believe that there was a political solution, I kind of thought, well, yes, I would like the world to change quite drastically, but I don't really have any power or influence. And to be honest, you know, although we are, you know, slaves to usury, and although we are, you know, we've got serious problems across the board, you know, on a kind of individual level, you know, as long as you educate yourself, you pretty much have enough freedom to have an enjoyable life, to have a family, to, you know, work a job that you don't absolutely despise, to earn enough money to enjoy your life, to travel, to make music, to be creative, to do art, whatever it is that you want to do, you can pretty much do it. And you can have a good relationship with the community around you. You can walk into any shop, you know, all of this kind of stuff that we took for granted.
That was up until 2020.
Yeah, exactly. And then 2020 hit and I went, you know, because I mean, I had already been working towards a kind of homesteading life. I mean, my wife and I have been working towards this future for at least the last 10 years, but very, very slowly and with no real sense of urgency, just putting one thing in place at a time. But then 2020 hit and I was like, right, okay, here we go. And I started educating myself on Agenda 21, now called Agenda 2030, how fast they wanted, you know, the entirety of society to transform, and that what they did in 2020 was a real serious acceleration of that. And I went, right, yeah, okay.
That was a warm-up. That's what people, I think, haven't got into their heads. 2020 was a warm-up for what they're going to roll out on people.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is that now, you know, you've got a lot of people saying, well, COVID is over, you know, you can, most places you can travel freely. They always neglect to mention that as a Brit you can't enter the USA unvaccinated still to this day, but other than that, most places you can still travel to. There's no, you know, for the most part there are no masks and things, except for like Chinese students in the big cities in England who always wear masks, by the way, for some reason.
They've forgotten, though, and they've adjusted to their new normal, and they say, look, it's all right again. And it's, well, if you could compare to how it was in 2019, even just going back to 2019, you would see that it wasn't all right. Like, there's so many things now that people have such short memories about this stuff.
Yeah, that's been the huge, the real shocking black pill, and this is exactly what Woodlander said in our chat, which I know that you mentioned that you'd listened to, and because I did ask him, you know,
I like Woodlander, he's great.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah, he's brilliant. And yeah, I asked him what for him has been the biggest surprise of the last few years, and that's exactly what he said, was the short attention span of the people. And it has been shocking. It really has. So anyway, 2020 was a huge wake-up call, even for people like me who'd already become disillusioned with a political solution. So from that moment, I mean, one of the first things I did, the first practical things I did, was invested all of my savings into cryptocurrency. Now, in hindsight, we can talk, and I know that you have some insight into this, in hindsight, we can talk about whether that was actually a good idea, whether it's still a good idea, those kind of things. It probably isn't at this point in time. But back then, I was thinking, I knew instantly that they wanted to take society cashless, that they were going to accelerate that. And I thought, right, okay, well, how do I hedge against that? Right, I get in early on digital money, and that's what I tried to do. And I set up an initiative on Telegram, a group called CryptoNats. So it was trying to encourage nationalists and dissidents to consider investing money that they could afford to lose in cryptocurrency, or certainly to do some research into it, to consider it. And that, you know, there was quite a lucrative period for a time. For those people who sold at the right moment, which not everyone did. I didn't, I will say, but I still found a way to upgrade my living situation. And that was really everything that I was working towards. Since 2020, it was like, right, I need to get some land. I need to find the means to be self-sufficient, to have enough land to grow food, to have chickens, you know, any other livestock if I so choose, to, you know, preferably have solar power, to have, you know, a well for water or a borehole, whatever, a stream, these kind of things, to not be reliant on the system. And this seems to be, I mean, this was exactly your thinking as well, wasn't it? Like, you know, we
100%, mate.
we now realize that we cannot take for granted that we're going to be able to walk into a supermarket and buy food.
Yeah, absolutely not. And this is one of the things that really frustrated me. This is back when I had my channel. One of the most common criticisms I got was, oh, you're just running away. And that is such a retarded criticism. I hardly even know where to start. I mean, you've probably had this as well. It's like, oh, you're just going to run away and live in the woods, are you? And it's like, look, mate, you think you're LARPing online as some sort of dissident. You understand that you're living entirely at the behest of this Leviathan state. Like, you're literally beholden to them. Your job that you go to every day, you only have because the state graciously allows you to have it. Your money in the bank only pays for anything because the state hasn't cancelled you. How on earth are you going to be a dissident when the state is clearly increasing its level of control over every single aspect of your life? When they roll out the highly controlled central bank digital currency, which they will do, or at least they'll try to, Whether they succeed or not is I still don't know. But they will try to roll that out, and it will be very, very miserable for a lot of people. When they roll that out, and it's going to be like China's social credit score system, you think they're going to allow you to say bad things on the, like, you think they allow you to keep saying whatever you want online? Like, if you don't, you can't fight something you're dependent on. This was my point that I kept stressing. Like, you can't fight a system that you're dependent on. And it is apparent that the system is a leviathan. It is enormous, and it controls almost every institution. So if you're dependent on any of these institutions, you're not against them. That's with it. Like, so you're going to come to me and you're going to criticize me for quote unquote running away. Well, what are you doing? What are you doing? And that was almost my question to these people. It's all right. What are you doing? And they say, well, what we need to do is blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I don't care about what we need to do. I don't care about what we ought to do. What that really is you're waiting for someone else to come and do it. What are you doing
right now?
Never had an answer. They never had an answer. No, this is immensely frustrating to me.
No, and I mean, this is, you know, I somewhat famously, you know, under my pseudonym at the time, which was Steed, had a bit of a run-in with a couple of known figures in the dissident right scene. Namely, at the beginning of COVID, this was Keith Woods and Morgoth. Morgoth, as good a man as he is, had the humility to actually take on board some of the things that people were saying to him, and realized relatively quickly that he had perhaps taken initially the wrong stance on the whole COVID situation. But people like Keith Woods and a few others like him still double down on
wankery.
Intellectual wankery, indeed. And you know, the point I was trying to make, exactly as you have just made it, is how the hell do you expect to be a dissident when you can't even go to a shop and buy something because your ability to access your own digital money has been prevented because of some kind of social credit system, which is taking into consideration everything that you're saying online, every place you're going, everyone that you're associating with, all of these things. So, you know, you put it really nicely in a nutshell there. How can you possibly fight something that you are dependent on? And that is exactly the problem.
You can't. Pretend that you are, and you can think that you are, and you can convince yourself that you are. But when the chips really come down, you can't bite the hands that feeds you. So if the hand that feeds you is controlled by the state has you by the balls. It seems so clear to me. And so it really made me annoyed that I had to explain this to people. And I think, you know, people don't want to face that reality. They don't like to see themselves. They want to see themselves as the hero, not as a slave. So they pretend to be something, and they're LARPing it. They're pretending to be something that they're really not. And, you know, the truth is that most of these people would do better just going and planting potatoes in it. You know what I mean? Like, than posting all this stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Tom and I, you know, in kind of building up to this conversation, we came up with a couple of good talking points. And one of them is the reason that so many dissidents are not taking action. Obviously, we have lots and lots of instances of people who are really stretched too thin. They don't have the spare funds to get out of their situation, even though I would contend that there's always something you can be doing to move your lifestyle towards a more self-sufficient one. But, you know, some people genuinely, you know, they're living hand to mouth, they've got dependents, whatever, there are various reasons. But there are an awful lot of dissidents who do have the ability but are not making these bold moves. Why do you think that is?
It is a question I've asked myself a lot, Dan. What was it? There was something I was going to say just then. What was it? It's about why aren't they taking action?
Well, there's the sense of nihilism. Yeah, that's something you mentioned. Like,
you're right. Yes. Yeah. So this is a sort of broader spiritual thing, and I haven't really discussed this with anyone else. This is something I've just been toying around with in my own mind, but I actually think that, like I believe in fate, and I believe that there are forces that orchestrate human behavior that are far larger than any one individual person. We are actually, to a great extent, just players on this world stage, and everyone has a part to play. And I actually think that the West, and by that I mean that, you know, the majority of white people certainly, is committing cultural and, to a large extent, biological suicide. And this is almost, I think you can almost see it as part of, if you've read Spengler, I think you can almost see it as part of the life cycle of the sort of superorganism of the West. Like it's actually reached the end of its life cycle. So all these liberals who do all these seemingly bizarre self-destructive things, they want to replace themselves with, you know, they want to debase themselves because, you know, they look down on themselves because they're white and they want to replace themselves with people of different color, and they celebrate their own replacement and they jeer and mock at those who stand against it. And they're cheering on nuclear war now, these people, if you've seen that.
No.
You know, the same. if you try to find any logical reason for that behavior, you can't, except unless they actually, it's almost like they actually crave an end to it all. They're actually, it's like a collective, like they're possessed by a collective spirit that drives them to suicide. I actually believe that's happening. And, this has brought me on to my second point that I forgot earlier. I don't know if you know about who Thomas Sewell is. He's a Australian national socialist.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah. He has he has some really interesting insight into this. And he thinks that essentially what's happening is, and I agree with him, is the white race is schisming in two. And I think that you can draw the schism pretty clearly, by who got the jungle juice and who didn't. It's almost entirely down to that. And I don't think there's a lot of these people that are actually just not going to make it. And I think that deep down in their unconscious back of their mind, they don't want to make it. They're not part of whatever future this world holds. They don't have a place in that future, and they're taking themselves out of it. And I'm wondering, even if we, and this is, you know, really getting into wild speculation here, but I'm wondering if we even end up with a nuclear war. And that is the final, you know, almost like the final hurrah for the West, because it's like this Faustian conquest of nature to such an extent that you can blow yourselves up with these atomic energy weapons. And there's a sense of nihilism and despair, but it's also a bit like the old man it's actually like my grandma, right? So my grandma lived until 102. She lived a really, really long life. But when she was in her early 90s, she fell down and I think she broke her leg and had a heart issue. And she went to the hospital and she almost died in her early 90s, right? But through the miracle of modern medical technology, she was sort of propped up and they gave her a stent in her heart and stitched up her leg and sort of basically brought her back from the dead, right? But she was never the same after that.
No.
She was already gone. Like that was meant to be her time to go, and they artificially saved her, and she was never the same. And she spent the rest of the 10 years of her life miserable and depressed. And every time I saw her, I asked how she was doing, she goes, "Oh, you know, just waiting for the time I'm supposed to leave," or something equally depressing. She was already gone. She wanted to die. That was her time. And there's nothing wrong about that. Like our culture has this fear of death, like a phobia of it. It's death is part of living. It's part of the world. You've got to embrace it with open arms, face it, rehearse your death, as Marcus Aurelius would say, and don't be afraid of it. It could come any day. You live a lot freer life that way, but there is a time for it, and it was her time, but she was kept artificially alive and she was miserable. And this is what I see with a lot of people today, like that fall into nihilism. That was a lot. So I don't know. Hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, no, it very much did. And something that I've been kind of wrestling with a little bit recently, which is kind of pertinent to the point you just made there about your grandmother. And I am sorry to hear that she spent her last 10 years miserable.
I'm just glad she's finally at peace, as long overdue. Well,
yeah, indeed. Yeah. And, you know, what this makes me think of is, you know, there's this idea of, you know, propagating life for life's sake. And, you know, we can look at all of the kind of COVIDians over the last 2.5 years who, you know, they wore their masks, they got their jabs and their boosters and everything to ensure, as they thought, that they were going to be prolonging their life for as long as possible. It wasn't about the quality of life. It didn't matter that they could no longer go into a restaurant and relax, that they would have to walk in wearing a mask, basically, you know, this kind of straight jacket for the face. All that mattered was the numbers, how long you can prolong that life for.
It's a technocratic view of the world, isn't it? It sucked all of the soul out of it, and you're optimizing for numbers.
Exactly. It's like, you know, alive but not living kind of thing. And, you know, whereas people like us on the other side of it, we took the view more that, you know, life is about quality and it's about principles and freedom and living a life of dignity, even if it's shorter than a life of indignity. And for
it's
the,
ironic. It's ironic that
it's, the, I was going to say it, it's in ironic.
Order,
yeah,
in order
go
to
on.
Truly live, you have to be ready to die at any moment.
That is that. That's the exact point I was going to make, because, you know, people like us, we, although we may have spent the last 2.5 years with this kind of almost embracement of death, this idea that it doesn't matter if, you know, if death is going to come for us now, at least we're going to go out with dignity. But at the same time, a guy like you and a guy like me, we have made moves to preserve our family's future in a way which those who are complying with the whole COVID tyranny are not going to have that opportunity for their family. So it's this weird kind of strange kind of dichotomy between being willing to embrace death and wanting quality rather than over quantity of life. But at the same time, looking at the long term, you and I have actually created a position for ourselves where we are the ones who are actually going to benefit from longevity.
Yeah. So to bring it back to something you said earlier about those, you know, why don't people take action? I think some of these people actually really deep down kind of are manifesting their, it almost manifesting their own end. Like they don't, you know, they say they want on the surface, they say they want it, but underneath they're really just, they hate their lives and they actually don't really, you know, they don't really want to continue living because they have nothing to live for. And there's something else that was going to lead me to a point on as well, which is, this is one of Thomas Sewell's points too, but it's actually a general right-wing point. So in order to, like, when you fully embrace right-wing thinking, and a lot of people that are supposedly on the right who talk about stuff online don't really fully embrace the right-wing thinking. Like, if you read Evola and you actually understand what right-wing, it's like people say to me, well, you know, Tom, you know, it's all very good, well and good for you going to do what you're doing, but not everyone can do that. I'm like, because not everyone is equal. That is a very, very core right-wing principle. There is inequality in nature. The people that can do it will do it. And the people that can't will be slaves to the state. And if you look at any, like, this is, if you actually read the rhetoric of the right-wing thinkers of the early 20th century, they understood that. And if you can even go back to any ancient society, like go back to look at how the Spartans lived, or any pagan society, I'm sure, and they will understand that it's like, not everyone gets the medal. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's actually a very leftist, modern Marxist idea. So if
of course,
not everyone yeah. can do it, but that's not a reason not to do it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone can do what they can do. I mean, you should have started preparing 10 years ago. If you're starting now, it's very, very late. But I do believe that where there's a will, there's a way. The will is very, very powerful. And if you want something bad enough, if you really want something bad enough, you can manifest it. So I think that one of those points there is, some people don't want to save themselves. And the other point is that some people, and in fact, I think most people, are still too comfortable. They know everything that's, you know, there's people that know about the WEF. They know about the central bank digital currencies that are coming. They know COVID was BS. They know all these things, and yet they don't take any action to separate themselves from the system. They keep claiming their benefits, or they keep going to their regular office job. You know, they stay in their apartment or whatever it is they're doing. They stay watching Netflix. Why didn't they do something? Because it's difficult and it's uncomfortable. They're still comfortable attached to the state. They get a centrally heated house. The central heating still works. You haven't had power outages yet, although they're coming probably, but you know, it still works. It's warm inside. The apartment's finished. You didn't have to build it. You didn't have to lift a finger yourself. You can go to, you know, the supermarket. Oh, well, they make a mask. All right, I'll wear it, but they still got food. Like, this is how people think. So like, until they, you know, until they really, those things are actually, those final comforts are removed, they will not do anything, because although as much as they like the idea of being a dissident and they like the idea of not being dependent on the state, and they talk online about how much they hate the regime and they hate the control and everything, they're still too comfortable to do anything about it. Unfortunately, these types of people, like, by the time they get uncomfortable enough to do something about it, it'll be too late. You were supposed to start getting uncomfortable 5 years ago. and then doing something about it then. Because if you're starting now, you're not to say you can't do it. I'll never tell anyone they can't do something, because I've seen miracles happen when people put their will behind it. But you're starting very late now, and it's, you know, if you're going to panic, panic early.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the very idea of kind of inequality, you know, holds within it the idea that those who do something sooner are going to be more rewarded than those who wait until the very last moment. So, yeah, I mean, even though we can try.
It's a very Aryan quality, by the way. I don't know how much of a racialist you are. I don't want to put off any of your viewers, but like, that is a European quality, because we had to deal with long winters. So what does a European person do? They harvest in the summer and store up the food for the long winter. And if so you should have been storing up the food for the long winter.
Absolutely.
If you didn't do that, then, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as to my racial views, you know, I've always made that quite clear. I hold absolutely no racial hatred. I avoid using racial slurs, you know, and this isn't just some, you know, I've got black mates kind of thing. It's, I came to the ideas of nationalism through the idea that I wanted every single ethnic group in the world to have the right to preserve itself. My crime was applying the same logic to my own ethnic group. And that is obviously the great crime of, you know, nationalists and most dissidents today. But yeah, I mean, to talk about, you know, right wing, but, you know, I've also made it quite clear that I don't consider myself right wing or left wing. I don't like pigeonholing myself in either camp, but everything that you attach there to the label right wing in your, you know, your diatribe there is, I completely agree with. You know, the idea of equality is nonsense as far as nature is concerned, and that is one aspect of left wing thinking which is self-evident nonsense. But just to kind of pick up a couple of the points that you've gone through there, I think with regards to nihilism, we can look at that from two points of view. We can look at the kind of the brain dead NPC, mostly kind of self-proclaimed left wing, you know, normie type, and we can psychoanalyze why they have this nihilistic attitude. And I think you've outlined that quite well. You know, I mean, friends of mine who, you know, I do have some kind of normie friends, and they, all that they're interested in is preserving the enjoyments that they've had, the pleasures that they've had in life until now. You know, I've got friends who are in bands who have been used to being able to tour freely and play festivals every summer across Europe and wherever, and they simply didn't want that life to come to an end. Myself, I actually sacrificed that whole life, because that was my life. I was in a band which toured a couple
Keyword,
of times a year.
Sacrifice,
and it's an important thing that most people have not been willing to do. And, you know, when they were told to roll their, that all they had to do was to roll their sleeve up or put a mask on in order to continue with their old pleasures, they were happy to do it. But what I was kind of more interested in discussing with you is why dissidents are being so inactive. And I'm starting to think recently that there is even among dissidents, there is this idea that what they realize the scope of what we have to do to restore our nations, our dignity, our liberties. And they are so black-pilled, whether it be consciously or subconsciously, that and many of them, you know, particularly younger ones, may not have the means to do anything about it in the way that you and I have done it. They may not have jobs even. They certainly don't have savings. They don't even have a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. And I kind of get the impression that a lot of them are literally sitting there thinking, just let it all be over, you know, and they would never admit that. They wouldn't admit it, but they're looking at what the likes of Woodlander and yourself are doing, people who are taking real drastic actions to set themselves up outside of the system. And they're just looking at that and thinking, I can't achieve that. And the magnitude of what we have to achieve collectively is so big that, to be honest, just let it be over. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And this, the problem with this just let it be over attitude is that it's not going to be over. I don't have any evidence for this, you know, source, I made it up. I sourced it from the ether, but
yeah.
This is a spiritual thing. This is a spiritual thing to wake people up out of the apathy they are in. So until you wake up, it will get worse and worse and worse and worse. And there is no end to how worse it can get. So it's, you know, you might as well act now. But I do want to have a little bit of sympathy, because I think I come across, I think, sometimes a little bit harsh and unforgiving and not understanding people. And that's not really, you know, I'm very hard on myself. So and this is how I talk to myself. So it comes off as being hard on people. And that's not what I'm trying to do. Same. But young people, you mentioned young people there, and I have a particular sympathy for them, because they've been born into a world that was ruined through no fault of their own. And so they're starting with a shitty end of the stick, you know, and they're starting at the bottom of a huge mountain. So what I will say to young people, if there are any listening to this, is there are practical things you can do. Even if you have no money and no resources, there are lots of practical things you can do, and you actually have far more advantages than you think you do. So the major advantage that young people have is it's going to sound trite, but youth. Effectively, when you're young, especially like in your early 20s, you have tremendous energy that you will not have again, and you have tremendous ability to learn and adapt to things. All you have to do is direct it. Sadly, too many of our guys end up directing it into useless things like video games, which is just complete poison for the soul. I mean, it's opium for the soul, really. But if you are a young person that's got his head screwed on straight, and this was a white pill for me. Because there was a guy that followed my videos and gave me lots of positive feedback on them. And he sent me DMs sometimes updating me with his progress. Young guy, early 20s, he was training MMA, and he had a garden with his mates, right? So what they had was a community garden where they bought a little plot of land, you know, between 5 or 10 of them. So it's quite affordable. You know, it probably cost them less than £1,000 each, probably, you know, a few hundred pound each to buy it or rent it or whatever they were doing. And he was growing potatoes on there. And he showed me like, oh, this is me doing, here's me doing MMA. Here's me growing potatoes. That guy's 21. He doesn't have very much money. He didn't have very much resources, but look what he did. Yeah, and that guy is going to be so far ahead. And these are things that anyone can do. So young people, even if you don't have any money, what you do have is your youth and your ability to learn quickly. So I would say learn skills. Learn skills as a young person. Learn the type of skills that would have been useful 1,000 years ago. There you go. Go learn how to grow a potato. Learn how to learn about building simple houses. Learn basic DIY, handyman type stuff. Learn how to make fires. Learn how to make a shelter in the woods. Learn all these basic survival skills, because there'll be a lot of, or maybe not a lot of, but there will be people like me who do have more resources, who've moved out into a rural area. Do you know what I need? Labor. I need people that can help me with what I'm doing, because it's too much for me to do on my own. I got a bunch of land. I'm gonna have cows on there. It's me alone. I'm too busy. I don't have time. I can't do all these cows and on my own. And what's more is that I believe the future we're heading into, especially in the rural areas of the US, is going to be a lot more violent and a lot more lawless than what we're used to. So you need men around you that you can rely on to help you defend what you have. So that's what I need. So if you're a young guy with the right attitude and you've got some skills, you will find there will be people that need you. This is actually such a scarce resource now. This is what people don't understand. Young guys with their heads screwed on straight who are willing to work with a good attitude are like so rare now, because everyone's a fucking retard plugged into Netflix and with no work ethic. So if you can be the one young guy that actually has, sorry, mate. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Finish your point there.
Yeah. If you can be the one young guy that actually has it and actually has the gumption and actually is willing to help. Like I was at somebody else's land last weekend, right? There was a young guy showed up there. He goes there and he helps out with them and he does shooting on their property. He's got no money. He's got no resources, but he's going to be absolutely fine. And you know what he said to me? He said, he's like, you know, we were talking to each other and he said, I said, why are you doing this? Why are you out here? Why are you not playing video games? He's like, you're either a liability or an asset. And I've chosen to be an asset. Guy's 17. That's amazing. What you need to be.
Yeah. I tip my hat to that guy and the MMA guy that you mentioned, that those guys are, I mean, you just know that they are going to be fine. You know,
I know he's going to be fine.
Yeah. And I, you're actually making a point which I've not heard made before, not just a point, but a recommendation there. And it is a brilliant one. Where I live, where I've moved to in rural North Wales, pretty much all of my neighbours are either retired or close to retired. Many of them are retired English couples who've moved over into the countryside, or they're elderly farmers who probably struggle to find local farmhands. And these, like, I've just got involved with a campaign, a local campaign to oppose a wind farm that they want to build on a nearby hill. And, you know, I won't kind of go into my thoughts on wind farms or anything like that, but suffice to say, I went to my first meeting recently with the kind of core campaign group, and all of them are old men. They're all old men from this location. I was by far the youngest guy there. Actually, there was another guy who was probably about my age, maybe, about my age. But the point is that these older people in these rural communities, they're only getting older. They're only getting more frail. They're only getting less capable of doing the hard work that is required when living in a rural area. They are going to need young people. And I can't help thinking that if, as you said, if you're a young person who goes and builds connections with these people with the right mindset, with the right kind of humility and respect, they will treat you like a son nearby. They will be so grateful to have someone with a traditional mindset who has energy, who wants to learn, who wants to work, who wants to help. And you never know, you might even find that in some cases, young guys end up building such connections with these people that they maybe even end up being gifted parcels of land or inheriting properties.
I can totally believe it. Yep.
Yeah.
Good morals, good attitude, honest, willing to work. These very old-fashioned virtues are like going to be in fashion again because there's such a lack of them. And this is what it's so easy to excel at this because you have no competition. Your average young guy today is a brainwashed out of university, like hasn't got a clue. All he does is smoke weed and play video games all day. That's your competition. Like, so it's not very hard to be better than these people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you were to teach yourself some basic skills and get a basic set of tools, like building and maintaining fences, or
I'd pay someone to replace the fences on my property, like tomorrow. If it's a young guy who did, he's like, I'll do your fencing for you. It'll cost you this much money, like $2,000 or whatever. I'd pay him to do it. And but like, I don't want to do fencing. It's boring. It's hard work.
Yeah, and if you're a young guy that's able to do just some basic kind of maintenance stuff, it doesn't have to be rocket science, and it doesn't have to be something that you have to go and train in. It can just be stuff that you pick up here and there, and mostly it just requires a bit of common sense, to be honest, with a lot of that stuff, because I mean, probably like myself, you're learning a lot of these skills now without actually having a teacher, and you're kind of learning trial by error. Just the other day I had to board my loft out so I could store some stuff in there. I made the mistake of hammering the boards into the rafters, which resulted in some of the plaster on the ceiling falling down, I was pissed off that I'd made that mistake, but it's just par for the course. It's one of those things, you make these mistakes, you learn from them, you move forward, you don't be too hard on yourself. But these young guys who, if to go into these communities, we often talk about how young men in the West have no hope of owning land. Well, all of that land,
it's not true. Land is historically overpriced. Land is overpriced. Like, when you compare, like, by overpriced, it's comparing the cost of rent to the cost of buying land. Land is more overpriced than it ever has been in the past 400 years, which means it's probably going to revert to the mean. So land is going to come down. But, or there's this other way of doing it, like you said, where if you were to go and like start helping on a farm, and like a lot of these guys don't have children, you never know, you could work on it. Certainly. You might even get gifted some, like, these things can happen. If you put your mind to it, put a will to it, the universe will change in such a way you won't believe what it can present to you.
Yeah. About opening up those avenues. But what I was going to say is, we talk about the difficulty of young people, particularly in the West, having an opportunity to own land. That land is mostly, I know a lot of it is being bought up by governments, by, BlackRock and Vanguard and the like, but a lot of it is owned by white boomers, by your own kinsmen, but they just happen to be elderly people who are sitting on these quite, especially in a place like Wales here where land is cheaper. Most of the elderly people who live near me, all of them are sitting on 2 or 3 acres. They're not doing anything with that land. They're not farming it or anything. It's just an asset to them.
You can probably go to these people and say, hey, you know, you'd have to build a relationship. But you could say, hey, I want to grow potatoes. Do you mind if I use your land? I'll give you a quarter of the potatoes that I grow. And they'd probably say yes.
I'd say that I'm quite similar to you in the sense that I maybe come across as being a little bit too harsh on people who are not taking action. But then again, I know if you're a young person today, if you're a Zoomer today, and your only hope of meeting a woman is Tinder, which is a horrific prospect to me as someone who is just about old enough to have avoided the whole Tinder thing. And your only prospect, or, you know, you sit there at home playing video games because you've got nothing else to do. You've got, you know, or you're online on Telegram or whatever. There are always things you can do. And even if you just begin with some sort of basic self-improvement, getting yourself in shape, just learning some basic, just offering to do some DIY for your parents or for your neighbor, things like that. If you know, I would give anything to be bored, you know, and any kind of Zoomer now who is sitting there in their room, who feels like they've got no hope for the future, and they're basically whiling away their time playing video games or being online or whatever. I know that this is kind of like a boomerish thing to say, but I would kill for the spare time that you have available to you. You have so much opportunity to learn skills, to better yourself, to read, to educate yourself, to, you know, whatever, to go and meet with people, to travel, and, you know, all of these kind of things. Yeah. So take advantage of that. You know, there's always something you can be doing. And what Woodlander is proposing, he's actually, he is getting groups of young men together to buy parcels of land to then build homes on that land in the same way that he did. You know, I mean, an Xbox these days, how much does it cost? Like a few hundred pounds, I guess. You know, how much are games these days? Like 50, 60 pounds each, I'm guessing. Something like that. Your iPhone, what's that, £1,000? You know, if you were to forego all of that nonsense, all of the takeaway meals, all of that bullshit, all of the designer clothes, the idea of having a, you know, a brand new car, just drive a banger for a few years, you could probably get together, you know, $5,000 within a couple of years, even if you're on relatively modest pay. That is enough money for you to then buy, you know, a quarter of an acre with a group of other dissidents and get your life in, your self-sufficient life in motion.
Yeah, absolutely. There was another note that I made while you were talking just then, which I might go into. It says that, going back onto why some people take action and why some people don't, there's something that I've come to call the virtuous cycle of action. And anytime I ever meet anyone that's accomplished anything of note, they've always started this thing. Like, they always have this in common. They will have gone through a point in their life where they started this cycle of like, I want to achieve X thing. And then they knuckled under and worked at it for a while, and they pushed through the phase of where results don't come immediately. And then they saw the results after a prolonged period, say a few months, 6 months, right? So for me, that was in my early 20s when I started going to the gym. And I started going to the gym, and it took me a few goes. I would go and get bored and stop going, go and stop, get bored and stop going. But then I went and I stuck with it. And I stuck with it for 6 months. And I stuck with it long enough that I saw that I could change my body. And that started a cycle for me, because what had happened then is I had made the connection in my mind that if you do something that's uncomfortable and you delay your, you know, without any visible results for a long enough, the results will come. You just have to have faith in the results. And I bet that you had an experience like that too, Dan, maybe with learning guitar or something like that.
It was actually probably the same gym. You know, I used to be quite into bodybuilding. You know, when I was in my early 20s, I got myself up from, I think within 3 years, I went from 11 stone to 15 stone. No, maybe it's about 5 years, I'd say, 11 stone to 15 stone. It wasn't all lean muscle, you know, there was definitely some fat on there as well, but I put on a lot of weight. And I was really quite obsessed with it for several years, and it got to the point where, you know, and it's this thing that a lot of guys go through who get into that whole bodybuilding thing, where once you've become a big guy, you cannot let go of that weight because it comes to define your identity. The idea of shrinking, even just to make your body leaner, is actually terrifying because you've become known as the big guy, you know. So, but anyway, that's kind of like a side point. But yeah, probably a very similar thing. I mean, that's a moment where you go, right, I'm not happy with how my body is. I'm gonna change it. And that's yeah. when like the it's a very simple kind of change of mindset, but once you learn to do that with your own body, then you apply it to your wider world and you go, right, I'm not happy with my job. I'm going to quit that job and get another one. I'm not happy with this relationship, you know? And yeah, you know, as you implied there, you can then apply that same mentality to any aspect of your life. And you can know that even if, you know, you decide you hate your job and you quit it and you go for another one, you might end up with another job that's even worse. You might end up, you know, hating it even more than you hated your previous job. But the point is, you tried to do something about it. You know, it's better to try and fail than to never try at all. And what we're going through now on a macro scale, all of us as dissidents, I mean, now is the time. I mean, this is another thing. When I was kind of talking about my history of the last couple of years, my mindset was very much like, right, I've got to do this now. And it really doesn't matter. Like, for example, with investing in cryptocurrency, I knew that was a huge risk. I didn't know very much about cryptocurrency at all. I knew that it was a very volatile asset. And frankly, it's a worthless asset. But I was like, right, well, at least if I put my money into that, and it all goes to zero, at least I try to do something to dig myself out of this situation that I'm in. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about the outcome of that or anything like that. It's not been neither positive nor negative. But what I've got from that most is just the idea that you just need to do something. And it doesn't matter if you fail.
So what happened there is maybe the first thing you did didn't work, but that kickstarted a process that led to something that has worked. And the reason I think that many people can't or don't take action is because they never kickstarted this virtuous cycle. They never got that first time. And a lot of guys do get this from the gym, which is why I recommend it. Like I recommend going, if you're a skinny guy or a fat guy, get in shape first before you do anything, because because it works. I've seen it work on people. Because once you've done it with one thing, you get so much self-confidence, you get faith in yourself as a man to be able to have an image in your mind and to be able to have some grit and take action day after day, even though the results don't immediately come. And then you have faith that the results will come through your actions. And that cycle builds on itself. As you said, once you've done it once with the gym, you know, then it builds on itself more. So like, okay, I want to get shredded now. I want to look really good. And then you work towards that. And it's like, okay, I want to make more money. I don't know how I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter if you don't know how you're going to do it. And this is people don't know how to manifest things because they never got that virtuous cycle started. You don't know you don't have to know how to end it to start it. You start with something, you start with a goal in mind. Yeah. What's your goal? Right. So in mid 2020s, I set myself the goal. I said, I want to have a farm and a homestead by the end of 2022. Looks like I'm right on track to make that goal within a couple of weeks, I'll have made it. It's kind of actually quite miraculous how these things end up working like that. But you start out like that. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't even know what country I was going to be in. Yeah. But it doesn't matter because all you need to know is what is the next thing to do. It doesn't matter. It's like, how do I, you know, if you're overweight, how do I lose, say you're 100 pounds overweight. How do I lose 100 pounds? Don't worry about that. Worry about how you're going to lose 1 pound. If you got to, like, how am I going to get, you know, you don't look at this someone with a, you know, 1,000 acre self-sufficient property with a castle and solar panels and all this and be like, there's no way I can possibly do all that. Doesn't matter. You'll psych yourself out like that. Start with the goal in mind, yes. But then once you've got the goal in mind, you focus on the next step. And everybody always knows what the next step is. Everybody can always think of a next step. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how I'm going to get off grid. What is the next thing that you can do that will take you closer than that? Oh, I don't know. Yes, you do. Yes, you do know. What is one thing you can do? There's always something. And then it's just a question of whether you do that thing or not. So do that thing. And it might be wrong thing, but that wrong thing is going to take you closer to the right thing.
Yeah. And it always comes back to that thing of being willing to put yourself into a slightly uncomfortable position. You know, a lot of guys come to me on Telegram, you know, either in chat groups or privately. And there's a big issue these days with men, not even necessarily younger than myself, who lack confidence. And they say, I don't know how to be more confident. And confidence is like, it's like any muscle. You can grow it. You can work it. You can exercise it. I mean, I, as I said, I'm not naturally a particularly confident or outgoing person. And the idea of hosting a podcast 5 years ago would have been terrifying to me. But, you know, I've given this example before. You know, I, on my Telegram channel, I started by saying, okay, right. I want to do this musical project. I don't think that I can really sing, but I'm going to have a go at it anyway. You get your confidence up that way. And my kind of confidence has come through my music. It's come through this kind of incremental process of putting myself in increasingly uncomfortable positions. You know, when I got offered to do, when someone asked me to do a European tour where I would be getting up on stage, you know, I'd been in bands where I'd got up on stage with three or four other guys as a guitarist. And, you know, that was a step of its own. But then, you know, a couple of, well, at the beginning of, or the end of 2019, a tour booker said to me, do you want to do this European tour? You'd be getting up on stage on your own with a guitar. That, when he said that to me, the idea was terrifying. It honestly was terrifying. But you can see videos now on YouTube of me performing my songs solo. And, you know, I'm not going to say that they're all immaculate or perfect, and some people might not like the music I make, but the point is now I'm comfortable doing that, where a few years ago I was not comfortable doing that. And I'm just saying this not to kind of toot my own horn in any way. It's just an example of how even something like confidence, which seems like a kind of abstract thing that you either have or you don't, that's not true at all. Every aspect of yourself, including your self-confidence, is something that you can work on. You just need to be willing to step into a slightly uncomfortable place and do that bit by bit, and then you'll find, you know, that you're more confident than you were a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you can't, you know, you can't lie to yourself deep down. You always know who you are. Like, and if someone else wouldn't have confidence in you, then you're not going to have confidence in yourself. And there's no amount of, like, there's no actual mental trickery. You can't trick yourself. You can't lie to yourself. Like, you can pretend, but you can't lie to yourself. So you can't trick yourself into being confident. There's no mental trick that's going to do it. Mm. You have to do the actions that would make someone else confident in you, and then you'll be confident in yourself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you have to do the thing first. And you might not be able to do a really big thing first, but you can always find, you can always keep on breaking it down until you can find a small thing that you can do first. And it's like, there's just one more point, that a note that I made earlier when you were talking, Dan, about I've written victim versus action mindset. And there's, I think there's, it's two type. There's two ways of viewing the world. There's the viewing the world as I'm a victim, and viewing the world as like, I'm going to take action to take control of my situation. And what we have today in the world is a huge number of people trapped in victim mindset. This is one of the other reasons that I stopped doing my channel. I got wind up by people that would basically, all they wanted to do is talk about how it was a Jew's fault all the time. And because I didn't talk about, because I didn't say that all the time, they would accuse me of like not naming the Jew or something. And I find ridiculous, because it's like, I don't want to get too far down that rabbit hole, but no one person or one group is like making you watch porn. Like, nobody's coming into your room and like grabbing your head and forcing you to watch it. No one is making you watch video games, like not play video games. You know, no one's forcing you to do this. What you're doing is you're positioning yourself as a helpless victim, and you're excusing your lack of action by making it all about how some powerful group has oppressed you and you're the helpless victim. And wow. And the irony, the tragic irony of this is that is exactly the same mindset that most Jews have. They are always the victim. They're always being thrown out of their countries. They're always, you know, oh, the Holocaust, or we can't let that happen again. They're like full victim mindset. And by you, it's kind of ironic, but by you putting yourself in the situation where you're saying, I can't do anything because the Jews or the globalists or whatever group it is, you know, it's their fault. And that's why I'm in this situation. You're literally repeating the exact same victim energy. Like, you've entered into the victim energy of the same people. And you have to like one thing that has served me well in life is always assuming that everything that happens to me is my fault. And if you view yourself as a victim, you'll be a victim. But if you view everything as your fault, you'll become in control of your future and your environment. Even if it really, and this is the real kicker, this is the real thing that, that people have to get into their heads. You have to assume it's your fault, even if it really is someone else's fault. If you go into a business relationship and the other guy screws you over and takes all your money, yeah, he did bad. But you know what? It was your fault because you got in the relationship with the guy and you put yourself in a position to get screwed by him, and your character judgment was not good enough. That's the attitude that creates winners.
Yeah, and that is so an uncomfortable truth, but it's absolutely true. Yeah.
So you've got to believe that you, because that's how you get power. That's how you get personal power. If you blame someone else, the moment you blame someone else or some other group for any of your problems, you have taken your power and you've given it away. Why would you give your power away? Keep your power and look at how your actions have led to that situation, because then you'll learn how to not repeat it in the future. So let's take the guy that blames his business partner will go through his whole life resentful and blaming, and will not, you know, and he might end up subconsciously manifesting the same mistake again because he'll view himself as a victim. The guy that says it was my fault, I failed to properly vet this person, I failed to use good character judgment, will learn from that. And the next time round, he'll say, this time round, I'm going to have better judgment, and he won't make the same mistake again. That guy's going to go on to win. So a lot of these, it's funny, a lot of the dissident right, it's quote dissident right, I actually think this is a bit of a stupid word really, but a lot of these people that online that claim to be part of the right are in exactly the same victim mentality as the left, as the people that, as the diversity hires and the women that complain about patriarchal oppression and all that, literally the exact same energy. The proper energy to have is everything that happens to me is my fault. I am in control of my situation. Even if it really is someone else's fault, you still have to believe that. Because it'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Sorry, go ahead.
It does. I mean, I made a video, one of the kind of the last videos that I made the effort to make for my channel, as opposed to these kind of audio podcasts, called the Victim Perpetrator Bond. And it goes kind of deeper than what you're saying. The idea of blaming someone else. It's also even just focusing on that which you're opposed to puts you into the paradigm of...
I remember reading, or was that a podcast? Or was that, I remember seeing something from you about that. I thought it was really good.
It was a video, and I think I probably did a post about it as well. But even, I hate globalists, in a kind of esoteric sense, in an occult sense, that word hate gets removed, or you say I don't like globalists, actually
yes,
becomes
you're energetically
I like globalists.
Binding yourself to them,
you're binding yourself to them, but you're part of the same narrative. All that's changing is your relationship to that narrative. So yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you and I are of the same mindset. So much of the kind of dissident or right wing or whatever who dedicate their time to pointing out the ridiculousness of Drag Queen Story Hour or Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister of Britain or, all of these things we could oppose. Well, okay, that's kind of fun. Like, that's a way to kind of, while away your time. But what are you actually doing to better your situation? Like, you mentioned a little while ago that you could say, pornography is all of the fault of, this group or that group or whatever. And you could say to them, well, no one's forcing you to watch that. And then often they'll come back to you and they'll say, no, yeah, but I don't watch it, but society as a whole does. And that's
yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Stop lying.
Well, yeah.
Not talking to you, Dan, just to be clear.
Yeah, no, the sad truth is that that probably is a truth to that, yeah. But not in me watching it, certainly. But but what I'm saying is that, they'll often, their retort to you will be, oh yeah, but it doesn't matter that I don't watch it. It's the fact that they've got the whole of society watching it. And it's like, well, hang on. You just need to be responsible for yourself at this point. And if we've not learned that over the last 2.5 years, that at this point in time, at this point in history, all that we really have any control over is our own lives. And when people talk about drag queen story hour or grooming or children, you know, being, you know, convinced to change their gender or whatever. Yeah, that stuff is horrific. And you know, I cringe every time I hear about that kind of stuff in the most horrible way. But are you sending your kids to school? Well, hang on. How can you complain about transgender propaganda and drag queen story and whatever whilst you're sending your kids to school?
Mate, you need to take such this is such a point that winds me up, is exactly what you just said. People that will complain about how the kids in schools are getting brainwashed to be transgenders and then will send their children to school. Hmm. It's like, I don't even know what to say to these people. Like, how can your thoughts and your actions have such disconnect? It's bizarre.
Well, they'll say to you, oh yeah, but my wife and I work. We the only way we can pay our mortgage is for both of us to work, and that means that we have no choice but to send our kids to school. And it's like, well, how important is it to you then, the upbringing of your children? You know, you probably live in a house near to your parents and your partner's parents, so you've got this kind of comfortable setup where you're growing up, you're living where you grew up, near to the people that you know, you've got babysitters on hand, you've got everything that you know. Well, if you're the well-being of your children psychologically was that important to you, you would move to Siberia so that you can downgrade your £350,000 house to a £30,000 farmstead, just to make sure that your children are not going to be, you know. And this goes back to the idea of sacrifices that people don't seem willing to make. And I'm sure you've got go on.
One of the interesting things about sacrifice is that I know that's actually a core pagan idea. I think there's a very metaphysical reason for that. This is just my, I'm way off base here, but this is my interpretation of sacrifice is, is that, you know, if you were to sacrifice eating that animal, but you're not going to eat it, you're sacrificing it to the gods. And that is there's a metaphysical quality to that. Like that this is a fundamental truth about how the universe works, is that nothing is for free and you have to give something to get something. And that is baked into the religion, from what I can tell. And I hope I didn't do a misjustice to you there.
No, I mean, as far as I know, there are instances of sacrifices where the meat is eaten, particularly around Alpha Blot, which is around Halloween. It's the kind of festive period around Halloween. And that's basically where, you know, all of the kind of a lot of the livestock was harvested, so to speak, and slaughtered to, you know, create meat stores for the winter ahead. And those animals were killed in a sacrificial way. But I think there were also cases of animals, and probably still are, of animals which are sacrificed to the gods. They're not eaten by the worshippers of those gods. So yeah, I mean, it's a basic law of physics, isn't it? You need an exchange of energy. Nothing comes for free. You always need to give something to get something back. And in that sense, there is a close similarity between the pagan religion and just the basic laws of kind of physics.
Yeah.
All energy goes somewhere, doesn't it? You know, you can't just keep amassing energy without expending energy, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like when you come up against one of these things, like the example you gave of the parents to say, oh, but we both work and we have to pay a mortgage. And like there is always a way, like you said, you just don't want to see it. Or you haven't thought about it hard enough, right? So what I like to do, an exercise I used to do before I like completely internalize this, is instead of saying I can't do something or I should do something, I'd say, how can I do something? And you just keep reframing it that way. Like, oh, I should take my kids out of school, but I can't. Well, rephrase that in your head. How can I? How can I take my kids out of school? And keep asking yourself the question, because your mind is actually ridiculously powerful. People don't use their mind properly. Like, if you ask it a question, it will give you an answer. Like, if you ask your mind a question of like, oh, why am I so shit, it'll give you an answer, even if it's the wrong one, right? But if you ask your mind a question like, how can I don't know how can I stop, you know, take my kids out of school, you know, I don't see how I can, but how can I, your mind will, you'll come up with something. Just keep asking and you'll come up with something. You might not like the answer, but there's an answer.
Yeah. And it will always involve sacrifice. That's the thing, you know. I think a lot of people have this idea that there's going to be a way to mold your life into this kind of more detached, self-sufficient way without giving up too much. Nah, it's, you are going to have to sacrifice. I mean, just brief example of my own life. I had to sacrifice living in the southeast of England, where my parents were, where my wife's parents were, where all of the friends that we both of us grew up with were, where everything we knew was, and we moved to the northwest of England. And the reason we did that is because we couldn't afford to live in the southeast of England. We wanted to have a family. We wanted to live somewhere where we would actually be able to afford a home large enough for even just a small family, which is, you know, what we coveted at the time. Then, you know, from there, you know, there's always going to be some form of sacrifice. And, you know, I kind of feel like I've got off lightly in some ways. I've not had to emigrate like you have, for example, you know, and I'm sure that you've got family over here that you miss and you'll probably see quite rarely from now on. But, you know, would you undo that decision at any point?
No, absolutely not. I've never been more sure that I've made the right decision. Yeah. You know, despite all that. And I want to put on, you know, I think we're probably going to get close to wrapping up here, but I want to put one final footnote onto that as well about sacrifice, which is that sacrifice doesn't always mean having to give up something great for something worse. Sometimes it's the other way around. In fact, often it's the other way around. So we were talking earlier about going to the gym and getting in shape. Well, going to the gym, I actually believe, is an act of sacrifice. And Jack Donovan wrote about this, wrote a good essay about how training is sacrifice. What you're doing every time you train is sacrificing your old, fat, weak self so that you can create a newer, stronger, leaner self. I know that sounds funny, but that's literally what you're doing.
I'm laughing because it's so true. Yeah.
You're literally killing off your old weak self. And it's like, even if you're training hard, you'll have the old weak self in your mind who's yelling like, no, no, I don't like it. I want to hold on. No. And you're like, no, I'm sacrificing you. Be gone. And then you come out of it a strong, and you keep doing that over and over and over again. And you literally kill off the weak part of yourself. And you change almost who you are and become a better person. And in the same way, you know, what are you exactly sacrificing by walking away from the system? You're sacrificing Netflix, you're sacrificing OnlyFans, you're sacrificing porn, you're sacrificing that poisoned food that they have. What exactly are you sacrificing? That's the fat body that you're shedding in order to make a lean, healthy body, which is going to be a different, more simple, more connected to nature style of life. So sacrifice doesn't necessarily, I mean, it is painful. Sacrifice is painful. Like it is, but it doesn't, you know, if you're doing it right, it you're getting better, not worse.
Yeah. Any form of transformation is painful. And yeah, I mean, that would be a really, really good point to end it on, but I just want to make a further point, you know, in the kind of spirit of finishing, as I'd like to try and do, by offering as many kind of workable solutions for people as possible. One thing that strikes me, and I think you're a good person to ask about this because of what you've done moving from England to America and buying land there. You mentioned in the chat that we had prior to this episode that you don't actually need any planning permission to build a property, a home, on land in certain states of America, right?
Yeah, it's wild. I couldn't believe it when I got here.
Yeah, and I mean, that blew my mind when you said that. I had no idea that there are parts of America where you don't even need planning permission to build a dwelling. Now, I've thought for years that, you know, and this is, I'm going to get some pushback from Americans on this, but I've thought for years that Americans do not know that they are born. Here in Britain, you know, it's an acre of land that has planning permission to build a property on is going to, you're looking at minimum of kind of £100,000, £100,000 just for 1 acre of land, which you are allowed to build property on. You know, I remember looking actually at a dilapidated house down near where I grew up in the southeast of England. And the house needed demolishing and rebuilding from scratch. The plot of land was probably about maybe a third of an acre at most. And this place was on sale. And remember, this is about 10 years ago. This place was on sale for £175,000. You're basically paying £175,000 for a third of an acre of land, which you have permission to build on. That is the reality of England and Britain. Now, in America, and you can probably shed some light on this, things are vastly different to that, right?
Yeah, they are. You are quite correct in that Americans are oblivious to the fact that they were basically born with a golden spoon in their mouths. The Americans will complain about things, and they'll complain about the price of gas, for example. Mm. And it's fully, you know, it's, oh my goodness, it's gone over $3 a gallon. It's like, that's still less than half what the Europeans are paying. That's less than half what they're paying in the UK. Yeah. But yes, the land thing is totally different here. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't very, very much better situation for land than in America than in Europe. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it, because I mean, there was a reason that people emigrated to America for the past 400 years. And it's because every single square inch in England is accounted for and obsessively filed away, and it's owned by someone, and it's been fought over for 2000 years. And there's literally not an inch in England that you can breathe in. Mm-hmm. Because there's too many people, and it's been so long that, you know, there's just these enormous century spanning systems that control who owns it. And yeah. America was like fully, like just full empty land to spread into. There's Kentucky, for example, has 1/10 of the population density. It's about the same size as England, and it only has 4 million people. Okay. Yeah. So that's 10 times as much land per person. And still, most people live in the cities anyway. So, like, it's just, it creates a totally different atmosphere in the rural areas, a different attitude. Like, you know, you could drive 2 hours from the city I'm in and still be in Kentucky. And, you know, like, just, there'll just be hills and hills and hills, just wooded with nothing there, nobody on it. I mean, people, you can buy the land so cheap. You can buy it so cheap. You go out and buy 1,000 acres for, you know, probably, I don't know, you probably get 1,000 acres for $500,000. You could, if you had your 100K budget, you could easily buy tens of acres and put a house on it. There's also the people have a different attitude. Like, what I've found is that the rural Americans are very anti-government, relatively speaking, compared to most English people. Most English people are actually like pretty, they're quite a subjugated people. They're quite, you know, they don't really, you know, they'll moan and complain, but they won't really do anything like about it. Whereas the rural areas of America, because it's quite remote, it's all remote. The state isn't there just half an hour away. And so people learn to be a bit more self-reliant and a bit more community focused and a lot more mistrustful of the government. So where I moved to, it's a very, like the area has a very, it's populated all by basically it's Appalachia. So it's like proper founding stock Americans. You know, that there's people living in the area that I live to that are descendants of the original settlers of that land, like kind of thing. And they kept the land and they never moved. They have a very strong focus on private property. They have a very strong attitude of live and let live. And they say, look, what you do on your land is your business. Just don't come and tell me what I can do on my land. And I'm totally fine with that. That is absolutely fine by me. And when I bought the land off the guy that I bought it off, he just lives down the road. You know, he told me that. He made that very clear to me. He's like, look, this is your land. You do what you want on there. I'm never going to, you know, it's not my place to come tell you what your business is. And that's the attitude they have. So if you want to put up a house, you can put it up. Like the only thing I've got to do is get it. Like I don't have to ask permission to do anything on there, but if I want like to get an electrician to come and do like a certified electrical work, they won't do it unless it's got like the proper septic paperwork, for example. But it's very lightweight. It's very minimal. And it's like, it's just a rubber stamp. It's nothing like England. In England, you got to go. The planning permission system in England is so messed up and so bureaucratic. You've got to know someone on the inside. I used to know someone that worked in planning in England, and the way he got things done was basically by bribing council officials. Like that's the unofficial way that you get it done, is by knowing someone on the council and bribing them. That's how big property developers get it done. The whole system's corrupt, and you just need, there's so much red tape to wade through. And if you've got a friend on the council, you can do whatever you want. And if you don't, then good luck. You'll be waiting forever. They won't even let you put up a garden shed. And what's worse is that if you do put up a garden shed without permission, your neighbor's going to complain and call the council about it. Whereas where I live, it's not just that the government isn't getting involved, it's that your neighbors are respectful of your space as well. And that has been very refreshing for me. I could put up a 1 million square foot warehouse on my land tomorrow if I wanted, and there's no legal reason why I can't do that.
Yeah, I've made it clear through a succession of posts on the Telegram channel that I have long romanticized the kind of pioneer attitude of Americans. And if it weren't so damn difficult to migrate to America, I admit I probably would have done it. I'm a proud Englishman. I love Europe, with all my heart.
A lot of ex-Englishmen here.
Well, I'd love to know how difficult they found it to migrate there. But you know, it's probably kind of off the cards for me now that I've bought this property and settled where I have. But
yeah.
You know, I mean, the reason that I ended up in rural Wales here is I love Wales. I admire and like most Welsh people that I meet. But it's kind of the closest thing within Britain, you know, rural Wales, rural Scotland, and a couple of very, you know,
it's about the best you'll get to being left alone, I would say.
It's the best you're going to get. And there is more of an attitude round here of that kind of mindset that it's like 25 minutes drive to the nearest supermarket here, and there aren't many other shops between here and there, so you do have to think ahead, you know, when there's a mm-hmm. storm, and you know, you're kind of on your own, you know, so it is a bit more towards that American kind of mindset of, you know, you're mm-hmm. on your own, you've got to fend for yourself. But you know, the reason I bring this up is because I've got a few good friends who are American. And they've complained endlessly for years about the state of America, how terrible things are there, how difficult their life is, how they've got no hope of this and that. And I've said to them, I've given up saying this to them now, but I've said to them a few times, why don't you take those savings that you've got, or why don't you spend a couple of years living extremely frugally, putting away most of your income, and go and buy some land in somewhere like rural Kentucky or Arkansas or whatever, and live the dream. Why don't you do that? And they always manage to come up with some reason why they couldn't do that. And
there's always a reason, isn't there?
There's always a reason. I'm just thinking that I don't even remember what reasons they give, because they're so nonsensical. But I just, you know, I always feel like saying to them, look, if you knew what it was like over here in Britain and more widely Europe, then you would realize just how much opportunity you have there. So I guess this kind of closing thought on this episode of the Fergan podcast is that any American listeners out there, I know that you kind of might recoil at what we're saying here. You might feel like maybe I don't understand what it's really like there in America, but as long as you're being honest with yourself, you know, as long as you've really truly asked yourself, why is it not possible for you to go and buy 10 grand's worth of rural property in Kentucky and build a home on it?
There are people I've met here who are doing exactly that. I was down at one of the properties I was down at a couple of weekends ago. These are guys that they don't have a lot of money. There's 10 guys. They grouped together, and I think they each put in about 10 grand or something, which is like, that's an amount of money that almost anyone can save up to, really. 10 grand is not a huge amount of money. If you frugal for a few years, even on a minimum wage job, you can get to that.
Yeah.
So each one of them put in that much, and they bought 50 acres in not too far from where my property is. They clubbed together. They bought the land together. It's a lovely bit of land. It's wooded. It's on the side of a mountain. It's got a lake. They've got a lake in the middle of it, so they can come. And it's like a really nice lake, too, that you can swim in. So they can come there to get together around the lake. And some of them have built little cabins there. Some of them are still only in tents. There was one guy there last time I went to check it out who has moved there and was living in a tent while he built his cabin. And this guy has just worked in construction or something. Obviously didn't have huge resources, but he was able to do that. And I think anyone in America can do, literally anyone in America can do this. And I actually think, with a bit of will and creativity, anyone in England can do it as well. But like you said, Dan, it is easier in America. So if you're an American making an excuse, you really need to take a long, hard look at yourself and say, you know, what is the real reason I'm not doing this?
Yeah.
Because whatever excuse you're coming up with is nonsense, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you for your insight onto that. Confirms my suspicions, I guess. But I think we've kind of touched on all the talking points we wanted to get through there. And as expected, I think it was a really good conversation that, and I hope people have enjoyed listening to it. But what are your plans with Golden Age Man? What have you kind of, or just generally with your life and that, you know, if you just want to kind of share what you've got planned?
So I'm not very active online, and I did take down all my videos. So I do post very occasionally on my Gab. That's the place to go follow me, is gab.com/GoldenAgeMan. And I'm thinking about maybe I might start doing videos again, but my theme is going to be a bit different, and it's going to be much more focused on practical solutions, and I'm not really going to touch political commentary for a whole number of reasons, not least of which is the ones we discussed earlier on about binding yourself into your opponent's reality. Yeah. By focusing on what your opponent is doing, you're becoming their slave, essentially. And I don't really want to do that. I want to focus on my own family and our vision for a future. Like, I actually want to, my vision is to build or found a community in the area that I've moved to, of like-minded people. So yeah. I'm blessed enough to have a little bit of resources. So I've got quite a bit of land. And I know that there's some people that have fewer resources than me that I'd like to have around me. So, I would consider something like giving them the land on a 10-year sort of interest-free loan or something like that. This is people that are very close to me, family, people that I trust, and having them come out there and build their cabin or build their house or whatever, and building up a small community that is designed explicitly to essentially be hardened and robust and weather the storm of what is coming, which I think is going to be quite apocalyptic. This is the fall of Rome, but it's like made 10 times worse because technology has amplified it. Yeah. I think it's going to be really, really bad. My goal there is to essentially what my giant project is for the next decade or two is to first get my own homestead set up with, get myself self-sufficient, and then get myself into abundance of production. So I'm actually I want cows. So I want to be able to provide meat for beef for people that I care about, my friends and family, so that when the WEF comes out and says, no, you're not allowed to eat meat anymore, it's carbon emissions, blah, 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 you can't sell it, it's illegal, you're going to have to eat beyond meat, beyond sausage, whatever that garbage is they're selling. I'll just be like, all right, well, no problem. Here, friends and family, you can buy these half cow from me at a very, very reasonable price. And we'll be okay. So first you get yourself self-sufficient, and then you help those around you. But my long-term vision, my real long-term vision, is to create essentially a resilient community of like-minded Christian families, a handful of them. And essentially, this is how it was done for millennia. This is in your blood. It's in everyone listening to this. It's in your blood to go this way. That's why your instinct, if you listen to it, will lead you to the same place. Because this is what our people have been doing for thousands of years. This is how it works.
Which shows that it's certainly not impossible.
No, it's not. It's not. And all these things are not that hard. Let's be honest. There's very, very stupid people that manage to raise cows. These aren't genius people that are managing it. They're ordinary people. They're just ordinary white people that have done this for thousands of years. So, you can do it too. So that's my long-term vision for what I'm doing. And if I was going to start making videos again, I think I'd like to focus on the practical aspects of self-sufficiency, homesteading, self-reliance, and community building. That is what I would focus on, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'd certainly like to see that. I think, but particularly with regards to your community building, because that is something which I think even the great man, the Woodlander, doesn't talk too much about. I know that he does have a
very
little bit
difficult.
Little bit of a community, and I know it's really difficult, and I'm sure he's at least working towards it, if not already got something in place. But I can admit for myself, I mean, I'm nowhere near self-sufficient yet, but my family and I are working quickly towards that. But one thing that is severely lacking in my situation is a local community other than the elderly people that I've come to know through campaigning against wind turbines. But they're not they're not the kind of, that's not the kind of community that I need. Unfortunately, I don't have enough land that I could start offering some of it to like-minded people to come and live on. But I am hoping that as the years progress, more people of like mind will kind of find themselves in.
I think we're quite early on this, Dan, to be honest. Like, I actually feel like I'm late, and you probably feel like that too. But compared to most people, we're actually very early. So when panic really starts hitting, and panic will really start to hit, we will be the ones that panicked 5 years early, and we'll be in a really good position to help these people. It's like that thing on the plane where it's like, put your own mask on before you put on the person, you know, the mask of the person next to you. It's a bit like that. Like, get self-sufficient first and get yourself settled, and then you can start helping other people. And I think there will be, I really am quite sure, as well, you can't be sure of anything, but I am quite sure that in the future we will see, as people start to realize the situation, as the situation in the cities gets worse and worse and worse, as people get poorer and poorer and poorer, as BlackRock owns more and more people's homes because they were forced to sell because they couldn't pay their mortgage because the interest rates went up, people will start to come around to our way of seeing things, and the previously impossible will suddenly become a necessity for a bunch of people. And so I think we're the sort of head of the vanguard on this one. And there will, you know, people will eventually come to, you know, if you can be in the right position, then people will come. What I will say also is this, is that I think the most, you know, the most important thing I've learned just from life experience generally is vetting is really important, because there's so many people that I've learned the hard way will say they're going to do something and don't do it. And I've been let down time and time and time again. And there's very few people that I'm still friends with who are men of their word in the, and this is the, in the, you know, it's almost like capital M, capital W in the old Anglo-Saxon sense, men of their word. They really, when they say something, they really mean it and they'll really do it. Those are the types of men you want to be around. And those are quite rare. So that those are the types of people I'm looking to bring in. But I think the old fashioned ways are good ways. How do people used to build trust in the old fashioned way? Well, through family, through intermarriage. You know, if you've got a brother-in-law or something like that, that's probably a guy you can trust. That's the kind of guy that you should be looking to convince, you know, or at least leave the door open so that when he realizes that his job isn't going to work out for him anymore, if he's a good quality character, then, you know, he knows that he'll come to you and maybe you can work something out. That's kind of how the way I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Or take on some kind of fight or some kind of cause together. I mean, nothing kind of, you know, galvanizes brotherhoods like fighting side by side. You know, I saw you may have seen this as well, a story in the news recently about a couple of friends who fought off a bear attack in rural America, and there's a photo of these guys, and one of them has been pretty badly mauled, the other one had his arm broken, and there's a photo of them together, and my first thought when I saw that was, those guys are going to be brothers for life.
Yeah,
there's never going to be anything that's going to come between those guys after what they've gone through together.
Yeah,
so, agreed. Yeah, and no, that was really well said, Tom. I agree with everything you have said there. And also, I think the other thing to add is trust gut instinct. I think that's really important. But, you know, when it comes when it comes to vetting people, if you get a bad feeling about someone, you should trust that feeling, you know. Yeah, but I'll leave it with that. And no, it's been really good talking with you, Tom. Really enjoyed it. And I wish you all the best with everything that you've got going on there, which I know is a lot. And your idea of building that community, even if it does end up being a Christian community, I'm in full support of it, because well, you have a right to do that, and you should build your world the way that you want it to be. So yeah, go for it.
Oh, thank you very much, mate. I really enjoyed this chat, and I really enjoyed being on.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed that conversation, and now it's time for the answer to last episode's riddle from the Exeter Riddle Book. The answer to that one was quite simply sword. And I think that's quite an obvious one, really. Shaped for a scrap. Bright metal threads. The man who at times involves me in a fight. The handiwork of smiths. I often dispatch well-armed warriors. Often I set friend at the throat of friends. The most accursed of weapons. And then, yeah, it gets a little bit more kind of abstract and surreal later on, as it talks about, I must forego the chance to father children. I cannot lie with a woman. But the same man who once bound me with a belt denies me now the rapture of love play. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's playing on the kind of personification there of the sword and the kind of imagining the sword as a person, but saying that it would be impossible for the sword to lie with a woman. So I think that just kind of reaffirms the fact that it is a sword, because obviously it's a dangerous weapon, and you don't want to lay a dangerous weapon next to a woman in bed. So anyway, the next riddle to read for this episode, number 21, is as follows. I keep my snout to the ground. I burrow deep into the earth and churn it as I go. Guided by the grey foe of the forest and by my lord, my stooping owner who steps behind me. He drives me over the field, supports and pushes me, broadcasts in my wake. Brought from the wood, born on a wagon, then skillfully bound, I travel onward. I have many scars. There's green on one flank wherever I go, on the other my tracks, black, unmistakable. A sharp weapon rammed through my spine hangs beneath me, another on my head, firm and pointing forward, falls on one side so I can tear the earth with my teeth. If my lord behind me serves me rightly. Now, I'm fairly sure I know what that one is. It's another quite obvious one, I would say, but I haven't checked the answer. And I'll leave that for the end of the next episode of the Fergan podcast. And thank you all very much for listening. And please remember that there is Fergan merchandise available at fergan.com, FYRGEN.com. I've got a great Revolt Against the Modern World t-shirt named after Julia Savola's book. And yeah, they've been quite popular. All very high quality water-based screen prints, not your kind of Teespring digital prints. These are high quality prints on 100% organic cotton garments for the most part. There are hoodies as well. So if you are looking for a way to support this podcast, then that would be a wonderful way to do so, because you get something tangible in return for a good price and it supports me. So thank you for considering that, and be well until the next episode.